This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another awesome Monday. As usual, every Monday we meet and we sit down to discuss a few things about markets. What we always do on Monday is we talk about what's moving markets, what's happening, how markets have opened, and technically how we expect the markets to really perform over the next few days, mostly within the week. We usually just have a 1 week outlook, and at times we could get to a long-term outlook as well. So today, we're talking about what's really happening on the market, what's really happening on various asset classes within, not only within within the region, but also within the country. Our major focus, as usual on Monday, it's always the Nairobi Securities Exchange. So stay tuned as we start this awesome session. Joining me as usual is our analyst, resident analyst, and I'll just let him introduce himself for those of you who are new here.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Davis Kadinji, and I'm glad to be here with you this morning. Yeah, looking forward to the session today.
All right, awesome, Davis. Thanks a lot. Let's just start it up with where we left on Friday, talking about markets as usual. It's Monday, so we definitely have to look onto markets. When we're looking on markets and we're looking on the performance of the local market, we always want to first really understand the general performance of the market. And in case you're wondering, guys, there are a lot of birds where we are. They're here as well, as usual, always trying to invest as well, probably investing their time and seeing if they can make some few shares of the market. So if birds are here and they're listening, so you should too. So Davis, looking at it from the market, last week we saw the all share index gain about 2.14%. You know, usually the all share index of the NSE is usually seen as a benchmark performance of the entire market. Do you think that this is something that was expected? Do you think there's a positive sentiment that is returning to markets, or what really would you say to that?
Sentiments seem to be the same week in and week out, to be honest. We really are looking for, what is that thing called? Something to stimulate the market, in a sense. We've seen foreign outflows continue. The same as last year, Q1 has also had a lot of foreign outflows. Of course, foreigners are the ones who dominate our market, and that is seemingly continuing, which is discouraging. We've seen something happen. Actually, I think this morning on the news that's just come in that the CMA is hoping to reduce, or the regulator is hoping to reduce listing fees for companies, albeit, you know, we've been told that story, I think, since 2017. Yeah, so hoping that will materialize, it will increase the number of IPOs happening in our country, and that will stimulate things. However, there's also risk going forward, which may actually drive more and more people away from the market, and we discussed this on Friday, the changes that are happening to our laws, which may lead to increased costs. You know, they may bring back capital gains tax of roughly 5% in the equity market, and that will see a major sell-off. We're hoping that that doesn't happen and that more incentives are created such that market volume and foreigners may come back into the market, at least to provide that necessary liquidity and the like. Yeah, but we really have been in a bear for quite a while. It is unfortunate. Really looking for something to stimulate, to act as a trigger of sorts, that will kickstart the market, if you will, going forward. Of course, there are numerous risks that are faced, such as political risks with the elections coming in next year. The effects of COVID are still being felt, and those are being seen on company financials, of course, except, both good and bad, some positive, some negative. But this still hasn't been enough to drive the market, you know, to create a bull, if you will.
So I think it's going to be very long before we really get a fully activated bull market, because, you know, Davis, the market sentiment doesn't need to be up for just 1 week before we declare it a bull market. It actually needs to be up consistently for about 6 months before the market fully hits a bull run.
But the psychological level is how much? Like 3,000, 4,000?
for the NSE should be around, I think, okay, honestly, right now we're just praying for 2000 because, you know, the 20 share index, I think, has been below 2000 from around March last year.
Yeah.
March 2020, it's very interesting and it's very sad because initially it used to be 3000. Then now we are back to where it was, back to 2800. And now we're here. The psychological level is we're at 1800 and 1866 basis points. So maybe we just need to look at if the market could really move to about 2000, I'm sure some gains would really be interesting to really look at Davis. It's very interesting. But then one thing that really caught my eye during last week trading was the overall market sentiments. The all share index was actually up. The 25 share index was up as well, about 1%. The 25, but the 20 share index was down again. I don't know what's really happening. It's usually very, it's slowly becoming a challenge onto investors on the market. And you know, most investors are always looking on the 20 share index, which is more of a price weighted index on the market. Investors are always looking onto this, and it seems like the 20 share index having a hit during the week might have been a cause of concern, but I think it's also because a few companies like KCB closed their books the previous week, the week before, that was on Friday. So KCB was trading ex-dividend on Monday. KCB was one of the largest in the banking sector. KCB, I think, is one of the companies that went down. KCB was down about 3.2% during the week. So I think that was something for guys who might have been wondering why that would have really been a major cause. But what really caught my eye and what I would really want to bring to guys was, Davis, can you imagine the market turnover for the NSE was at 2.4 billion and Safaricom did 79% of market turnover for the whole week.
Yeah, that is so high. Like, okay, it's kind of discouraging, you know.
It's very discouraging.
Because honestly, we need more. I remember seeing a post recently of how much Safaricom is paying in taxes, you know, in the billions, of course. Someone commented, what if we had thousands of Safaricoms? What if we had an enabling environment to create such companies, to have more IPOs, have more incentive for companies to list such that the liquidity is spread out in a sense? You know, now it's like you come into a market to just invest in Safaricom, unfortunately.
You know, like, this is 80%. Usually, if you get in a diversified portfolio, you always need to get about, you need to spread your portfolio to 80% of the companies that are between 60 to 80% of listed companies on an exchange so that you can have your portfolio termed as diversified. But it's weird that if Safcom is already doing 80%,
now
79. So
now imagine if the share price climbs to 50. Like, let's say they get the telco license, they start expansion, now the share price rallies to 50. They'll control almost 90% of the market. You know,
and I think this is, it's getting somewhere where it's slightly becoming a bit of a risk, as much as it's a good thing. Because you remember when KCB and NBK were to announce the deal where KCB was now buying NBK, and that morning from around the morning from market open all the way to around, I think, 11 a.m. the market was, the NSE had suspended trading on both KCB and NBK until the release of that information. So I'm just wondering, if we get such news for Safaricom and Safcom is suspended from trading, even if it's for just one day, or even if it's for a few hours, does it mean that we're going to see less than even a million in terms of turnover? Because I'm very sure, with this level of risk, if somebody would invest in Safcom and then guys hear that Safcom has been suspended for trading because there's some material announcement coming in, you know, guys would actually shy off all the other stocks. Who would want
market to
trade the other stocks? So let's see what CMA would do. But, you know, it's not really just about CMA giving guys lower listing fees. But it's also about the enabling environment, just as you've mentioned.
Like lowering trading costs.
Yeah, everything. We really need to have a business environment. I'm seeing yesterday that Tanzania, the new president of Tanzania, Samia, has actually, Her Excellency, Samia Suluhu has said that she'll be pushing to reduce a few taxes, some of them including the income tax to 8%.
Oh, wow.
We were talking about Tanzania having the VAT at 18%. And I know she said that she's proposing for a few raft measures when it comes to the tax area within the country. So I'm really hoping that this is something that other countries will be able to look at. Rather than us always looking at taxes going up, at times you can just always bring them down so that we can have a lot of companies, individuals. Whenever we have an enabling environment, everything else will literally fall into place, I believe.
Yeah, the problem, I believe, is the government sees we can't actually afford to do that, unfortunately, because our interest expenses are so high. The amount we're paying on debt and pensions alone next year, I think, will take up roughly 80 to 90%. This coming year, will take up 80 to 90% of revenues. So we have to borrow more. Borrowing more means more debt. More debt means more taxes because someone has to pay these things. It really is unfortunate. Whew. Yeah.
Is it always like? Should it always be just negative news when it comes to the taxes within this government? So it's something that's very interesting, but we'll be able to just have a look. We'll just have a look, a wider look, and just hope that things turn out to be fairly interesting. So that's one thing that we still really hope that we'll be able to come out even at the end of this the entire period.
Yeah.
So also looking at it from another angle, I'm just looking right now, and for those of you who are wondering, you can always be able to get this data on HISA. So I'm just checking on the market on what how Safaricom is actually trading at the moment. So Safcom has opened, it's already up about 0.1% in market activity. And I'm seeing that, and for those of you who are wondering, Safcom closed last week at, let me just confirm the price. Safcom closed the week at 40 shillings and 35 cents. And right now we are here, and just checking on the market, demand is still very high. Demand is at 40 shillings and 30 cents. We're seeing about 729,000 in demand, and we are seeing supply of about, supply is just less, about 387,000. So I don't know, but guys seems to...
It's like every week, yeah. It's just going to an all-time high.
Yeah, because guys still want to buy.
It's interesting. You remember at 19, I think we were being told Safcom was overvalued. Now, at 40...
It's been overvalued since it was 15, so we are still here. This is the time when you'd bring in a challenge. I was just seeing somewhere where someone had shared a post about a comment that someone had made about the smartphone, and he said like phones which don't have buttons. Was it the Nokia CEO or who was that? So I feel that's one thing that guys would really look into. You'd now just want to ask guys. It's like Davis over the weekend. I don't know if you saw that post that was shared about ensuring SpaceX, what Warren Buffett actually said, ensuring SpaceX rockets. And there's one CEO who said that he wouldn't actually insure. He said, like, that's out of the topic. Mm. And then Warren Buffett said, it would really be interesting just to see on the insurance value would go up depending on the occupants. Because if Elon would be in the rocket, then he would actually in the spacecraft he would rate the premiums way higher.
Yeah.
So people usually think on this on different levels. So even when Safcom guys have always thought it's overvalued, and I know there's a time when we had a discussion with a gentleman known as William Momanya. I know you know him.
Yeah.
For guys who don't know him, he's also a very awesome analyst. One of these days we'll definitely have him here on board. We were having a discussion a year ago with William, and we actually priced Safcom at about 31 shillings and 50 cents.
Mm.
At that time, Safcom was trading at around 25. So I know some investors might have bought it. But looking at it from this angle, there are people who said it was overvalued and all that and all that. And I remember when it hit 33, we were with him and we were like, this stock is now overvalued because it's already gone past your estimate, which was 31.50. Now you're looking at it from another angle. Safcom is now trading, because I remember some investors who put in actually sold within that period when it was at 33.
Mm.
And now, guys, are seeing Safcom is almost hitting 43 because their bids at 42, their offers at 42.
Yeah.
So if the supply is actually at 42, then it means there's...
It depends on how you value a company. For listeners, there are many ways to value a company. Either you look at it as a value play or as a growth stock, or literally you're just trading. You're just trading the price action. So many a times, the analysis that people tend to default into is value... It's value analysis.
Yeah.
Value investing, sorry. I keep on forgetting. Yeah,
most guys.
Proponents of Warren Buffett, because you've seen that. It's the most effective. It's had the highest returns. I think it's had 24% compounded annually for 30, 40 years or something. So 1,000 invested there when it started would now be worth $1 million or in excess of that right now. So a lot of people are value proponents, but we have to take into account that there are a lot of stocks which are actually growth stocks. You know, you have companies like, Facebook and Google, and you're imagining the immense size, and they're growing at annual rates of 30% year on year. You get, that is an insane amount of growth for a company that is that big, that is such a behemoth. And so people, rather than value it based on present cash flows, they've already taken that into account, especially in the low interest rate environment, which will drive valuations up. And they're looking forward. So they're looking to the future and seeing, since this thing has been growing at this rate, in future, it's likely to even consolidate more. So you've noticed how these big players, rather than quote-unquote innovate more, they just gobble up the smaller people. They just accumulate these things, and that adds to their growth. Of course, it's bringing antitrust lawsuits and everything, but how these things usually end, it's usually a slap on the wrist, unfortunately. So yeah. There are different ways to analyze a company and view them, and it's all up to you at your discretion, depending on your risk tolerance, of course, and your age, such metrics. You know, you can't be 80 and then investing in growth stocks, and then you still get that thing falls 20% in one day, so you'll catch a heart attack and die. You know, so maybe if you're younger, you have a higher risk tolerance, you have less means in that, you have less money to invest, but
yeah.
You have a higher risk tolerance. And then as you get older, your risk tolerance reduces, and the main aim of your investing is capital allocation. So these are among the things to consider as you're investing in a particular portfolio, and among the considerations that you should take seriously.
I think it's very interesting. That's a very awesome point, Davis. And I believe when we get to sort of value investing, the younger generation really need to really pick it up as early as possible.
Yeah.
But also the challenge is most of us have a huge challenge really grasping time and just trying to invest and doing valuation. Most people usually love investing, most guys, and I know this is a challenge most of us, is we want it now and today. You know, guys,
quick returns.
Yeah, I know I've had a few sessions with some of these with mostly the guys in universities, and you find people telling you the theory for Warren Buffett no longer applies. Nowadays they want to buy something today, and they want to get into something today, tomorrow. You want to buy Safcom today at 30, it goes at 40, but anyway.
But 10% returns.
10%.
No, that's really is unsustainable, you know. There's that saying, what comes easy doesn't last, and what comes... Wait. Hey. Okay, I've forgotten the saying. Anyway, what comes easy doesn't last, and what lasts doesn't come easy. You know, so for good and solid companies, for value to be unlocked, it's over longer periods of time. Unfortunately, especially because of social media nowadays, people just see this rocket ship emoji. Oh, I made 10x returns on which investment. You're forgetting that 90% of people are actually losing money.
Actually, 90%. What people don't know, and I think I mentioned this last time, that for retail investors, 90% of retail investors, usually they don't do their research. They always buy because of the hype, and 90% of them always lose money. At 90%, at almost all times, you can buy a stock today. You've sold Safcom, and then you buy another company because you think it's going to go up as well. You lose. You exit again because you're losing money. You buy another one, you lose. So that's usually one thing, because guys don't really take time to do this research. But
and then when you exit a position is when the stock starts going up. That's how you invest for the long run. Because not to be like against traders. Of course, there are those traders who make money, albeit statistically a lot lose money. That's the thing we're cognizant of. So you really have to take these things into consideration. Also, why it is that you're investing. Are you investing for quick gains? You have to know that this is difficult. Like, imagine there's a team of fund managers, analysts all over the world. They have teams that are doing constant analysis. They're looking at across sectors, across industries, every single thing. Like, what is the edge that you have that's going to defeat them? You know, that's why Warren Buffett says it's better to invest in the index. You're unlikely to beat the index, the S&P 500, for example, because at the end of the day, it really is hard to be a good stock picker. You get, like, I'm in, I made my money, I've gotten out. It's better to invest with the whole market, because the whole market moves with the whole economy, and the economy over time tends to go up, in a sense. Yeah.
Something that's very interesting, Davis. I guess we've really had a lot of discussion on the telecommunication sector. Mm-hmm. I know Jackson usually has a few reservations whenever we talk about the telecommunication sector. I don't know, Jackson, you'd want to chip in something when on the SAFCOM thing? The SAFCOM actually took about, I know you were not in, but SAFCOM took about 79% of the market activity last week. You'd want to say something on that?
It appears he may not be with us.
All right, okay. Maybe Eric Jackson is not into. He's not able to really say something. But I guess maybe that's one thing that we'll be able to look into. Davis, looking on the banking sector last week, banking sector only accounted for 16% of the week's activity. So usually, what I usually say is, if you're into a bank and you have SAFCOM shares, I think that's enough, because look at it from this angle. SAFCOM took 79%. The banking sector took around 16%. So technically,
you already diversified.
You've diversified the portfolio. There's nothing, because it's like 95% of the market activity was really done by just two sectors. And my major concern is the stocks that are in the manufacturing and allied sector of the NSE. That's BAT, EABL, that are usually considered as some of the blue chip companies. They really don't have a lot of turnover unless they're moved by higher margins.
Yeah.
My primary concern would be, is there a way that the NSE and maybe these companies, bring it all again with CMA, is there a way that they can be able to really have probably these companies to, because this is where fractional trading really comes in very important.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because companies like BAT is considered a blue chip company, but it only moves about, like last week, the whole of the week, BAT only moved with 47,000 shares. Yes, that's 21 million worth of value, but comparing that to all these other companies, yeah. Even Britam, companies like Britam were actually moving higher than, than BAT.
One of the highest risks in our market is liquidity. So for those who hold smaller portfolios, you may not understand it or be fully cognizant of this fact. But as your portfolio grows and you have more money, you'll see the difficulty in entering and exiting a position. You know, because you may find, like, I don't know, was it Bok a while back? For you to, let's say you put an order for, let's say 100,000 shares. So maybe you're trading 60, that's 6 million. You know? That order will take a month to be filled. You get, so you're just waiting a whole month and we, for your trade to be executed and the like. Or alternatively, if you want to, I guess, do it quote unquote quicker, you just buy at higher prices. We really need ways to increase liquidity in these markets, as I feel that will increase investor,
at least investor activity
action. Yeah, and maybe fractional trading should be something that's considered.
I know that's one thing that the HISA team has been working on, and we hope that we'll be able to, CMA will give approval one day, sooner or later. It might not be today, might not be tomorrow, but definitely, yeah. At HISA, we've been working to, we've been working, and we hope that we'll be able to make applications to CMA to allow fractional trading through the HISA platform.
Yeah, that's amazing. By the way, for those who may not understand, in the NSE, you can trade, you trade what, shares in hundreds.
Yeah, in hundreds.
In hundreds.
It's huge.
Yeah. So a fractional trade would be like, let's say you trade one share or 0.5 of a share.
Yeah, like you see, instead of you buying 100 shares for BAT, you know, it's a good company, but it's trading at about 453 shillings.
That's 45.
BAT has also declined. I remember days when BAT was at 800.
Yeah. Hey,
this market has taken a hit. But if BAT is trading at 453 and you can be able to just bulk in a few guys, even if you're to go and hit the market at 100, but you can get like say 6 or 7 orders for the odd lot market and you bulk it into 100 and sell it and probably buy it, I think that would be something interesting. Something that we hopefully, even if it's not us who definitely bring it through HISA, but we hope that the NSE and CMA would one day allow for trading of these fractional shares. Davis, generally, what would be your outlook this week? Already we've seen Safcom is still continuing the rise. Guys, checking on markets right now, I'm just checking again on HISA. I'm a little bit excited. I'm always a Home Africa fan, one way or another.
Oh gosh, I usually forget that company still trades, yeah. What?
Home Africa has moved about 26,900 shares today. The market cap of Home Africa is 170 million. So in case, Uchumi's market cap is lower at about 98 million. So if you have 98 million, you can come in and buy all the listed shares for...
Yeah, you can buy the entire company.
Man, you can
but
buy,
what are you buying?
You're buying nothing. You're just buying the name.
You're buying the brand, I guess. So that's an intangible asset.
Honestly,
and then you're
even,
the,
even the brand for Uchumi. Does Uchumi still have a brand?
Questions to ponder.
To be a hard one. But let's see. On the sad bit, I'm seeing Britam. Britam Holdings is on the decline again. Another extension from last week. Britam is down 9 shillings and 20 cents. Sorry, not 9 shillings and 20 cents. 9.2%.
Oh, for real? What?
Yeah, trading at about 6 shillings and 12 cents for the day.
What's the volume on that?
Volume for Britam. Let me just check on that. Just give me a sec.
Because actually, when the market opened, I think after the results, they dropped 15%.
It was down. So yeah, so looking at Britam as well, coming down today. I think it's a major cause for alarm.
Yeah.
Britam has a volume is still small. It's only 700 shares that have traded.
That's barely anything really. If it was in the hundreds of thousands,
that would be something
concerned.
Considerable.
But to be honest, Britam, after listening to the management call, and I think we discussed this on Friday, the future prospects seem bright. Okay. Of course, this is not information to buy or sell any security, nor are we liable for your decision to buy or sell any security. These are merely our opinions and for educational purposes. So they took a really large hit because of how their portfolio is. Their portfolio is really skewed toward equities. So when the equity market, as our stock market, has been performing poorly, they took a large hit on that. They're having lots of realized and unrealized losses on, what is it, fair value properties and the like. The main concern, of course, was their fund, their wealth management fund, which lost 5 billion. Sorry, they had to make provisions for 5 billion on losses in companies such as Nakumat, Imperial, and Chase Bank. First of all, that was of concern because you'd assume that these provisions were made years ago. It's like either the old management wasn't cognizant of what it is that happened or, you know, why.
Yeah, because sure. I think a provision for a company like Nakumat should have been done, and even Imperial should have been done way, way long ago.
Yeah, so it's an issue of concern, but it's good to see that the new management is cleaning these things up, and they honestly come forward and say, okay, we messed up here, there's a lot of losses. And the reason, you know, they have their parent company that's helping that fund. The fund itself is 28 billion assets under management, while Britam itself has 250 billion. The reason they're helping that fund is because their investors are invested across multiple pools. You'd imagine if one fund collapsed, the run on Britam that would be there, pool would just be pulling their money out, which will of course reduce investment income because now they have less money to invest and the like. It would be really, really bad. So it's a good thing that they've provisioned and that they have a strategy. They're yet to unveil their 2021 to 2025 strategy, but among the future prospects is that they could be looking for a strategic partner to increase the capital, to boost capital in housing finance, possibly trying to recover, help the bank recover. Because if they were to realize their losses at present, they would realize a a loss of roughly 70%, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, because they bought, which is quite the haircut, which is quite the loss. But it's good that their core business, the insurance industry itself, is actually improving. I know globally they did 50% growth year on year, so that's at least one of the driving metrics. Their combined ratios are going lower, so combined ratios just means that they're more efficient, to be honest. Because insurance underwriting is really a painful business. Losses will, I mean, hence investment income subsidizing. But going forward, it seems that the management team is really optimistic over the future. We just have to wait and see how it plays out, to be honest. Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know if somebody was listening, Davis, because I'm seeing Uchumi. Uchumi is actually up 4% now from a flat. Uchumi opened flat, but now I'm seeing it's up 4%. Don't buy Uchumi, guys. This is my advice to you.
No, we don't give financial advice.
I'm not giving you financial advice, but this is my opinion. Don't buy Uchumi, because you had it on this podcast. Don't buy Uchumi.
Yeah. Oh, there's a question by Moses, by the way.
Yeah.
Because of the provision. Okay, maybe we can explain it. I think I already have. But so essentially, they have a wealth management arm. Okay. A wealth management arm. This arm has 28 billion in management, assets being managed. So apparently they made losses in Imperial Bank, Nakumat, and Chase Bank. I'm assuming they bought into the notes, the bonds that different companies had issued. And then they didn't make provisions for these losses. So these were actual, these are actual losses that were supposed to be realized years ago, but it seems like someone was kicking the can down the road. At least that's what we can assume going forward, because management didn't give a lot of information in that particular regard. And so they had to make a very large provision, which is, how much is 5 billion of 28? That's like,
roughly
30%, thereabout, which is a lot. That is a huge loss. But if they hadn't done that, a lot of people would have moved their money out of Britam, because they would have realized that loss, and multiple people are invested across multiple asset bases. So they just took the hit now and are managing that portfolio. Though they mentioned that it's unlikely that a large section of this will be recovered. So when, let's say, a bank or a company makes a provision for let's say non-performing loans or assets and the like, they expect the value of this, the provision compensates for the losses, estimated losses in this particular thing, and there's a chance that that particular asset may recover. So for example, in our banks, they've made provisions, they increased provisions 200 to 300%, because they expected non-performing loans to increase exponentially, but that wasn't the case. So going forward, in half year and full year financials, you'll find that banks will reduce their provisions, which will increase net income, which will of course increase dividend payouts and the like. That's why I'm bullish on banks, by the way. Yeah, and the like. So that's the long and short of it in many words.
Very interesting, guys. I don't know if there's something that maybe we might have left out during today's session, but we've really had a look on the market. I believe this week, maybe what we can really have on the watch, Davis, I don't know what stocks you'd want to have on the watch this week. We can also have another discussion on this through the HISA app. There's a discussion platform on HISA, so we're definitely going to start a discussion on this. But for me this week, I would still be looking on Safaricom. I believe I'm looking on Safcom. I don't know if there's any other company. Oh, and Home Africa.
Wow, you trade Home Africa. Yeah.
No, okay. So guys, this is the honest truth. I'm not into Home Africa. I have 300 shares for Home Africa. Home Africa was the first company I ever bought on the NSE.
Hey, you're a market mover.
I've had those 300 shares. They're still there on my portfolio. I'm never going to sell them, even if the company is suspended.
Okay. So your loss is what, like, should be 99%?
Yeah, it's
by
about
now.
99%. So
hey, how do you even look at such a thing?
Yeah, so Home Africa, whenever I listen about them, I listen to Home Africa, it gives me chills. You see, Home Africa has had changes in management for a very long time.
Every year
there's a change in management, and you're like, this year it's a better one. We're going to see positive changes. The guys who come in, they actually do worse. So I'm not saying that the current team for Dan Awendo is doing bad, but really, I'm just having it as my portfolio. I think it's something good to have exposure in real estate.
Quite interesting exposure.
Yeah, so I have an exposure in real estate some way.
Some would have said Centum, but no. Felix, somewhere.
No, I chose into Home Africa because this was a very, it was an awesome company, Home Africa. It's wow. it's a home for Africans
in
Africa.
You bought into the name instead of
I bought
of
into the name.
Financials.
By the way, when I bought into Home Africa, I think I was buying it because of the hype of IPOs where guys buy and it goes up. Mm. I bought the dip and it keeps dipping.
sorry, man. Anyway, but you learn from these things.
Yeah, so for guys, if you're in Home Africa as well, you can give me a shout out and we can always be able to have this discussion as well. I'm going to open a chat for Home Africa on Hisa app. So
wow. If
you have any concerns, any questions, something that you feel we can actually raise with the management as a shareholder, please just download Hisa. You'll go to the discussion forum, check out, I think it's going to be one of the latest posts today. You can just check on Felix and you'll be able to find me there with a tag post for Home Africa. Safaricom definitely is on our watch. I know that's something that we're all looking forward to this week and we hope it doesn't get down. Because if Safaricom goes down, then the entire market goes down. We don't want the market to go down. The index, the 20 share index is down. We're already at 1800. We are depending on Safaricom. We don't want it to go down anyway.
Actually, year to date, the NSE 25 and all share have actually been going up, which is, you know, good. In a sense, things that I'm looking toward this week, okay, I'm not particularly focused on stocks per se. Okay, I'm more of a long-term guy, so I'm seeing a lot of stocks trading really cheaply. Of course, you have the likes of Barclays, which didn't announce a dividend. You'd imagine going, and the share price has been declining. You imagine that when they reduce their provisions and then they declare a dividend, that share price will really rally. Again, this is not investment advice. These are just observations of a person on a certain podcast. So
on a certain podcast, guys, remember.
So just, you know, use wisdom as you look into these things. But things of interest that I know will impact particular stock prices going forward is, first of all, yeah, that when banks reduce their provisions, or at least that's what I estimate. And I assume it will be as significant as their increases. And then Jubilee, the deal is supposed to close in June. This is May. So next month, done with Allianz. And so if they announce, they'll have a cash inflow of like 7.7 billion thereabout. If they announce a special dividend, if they even pay out 20%, that's in excess of, a yield in excess of 10%. So the share price, there should be some action on that. If I were to reckon, I guess, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic, if you will.
Yeah, but now, Davis, that you've mentioned ABSA, I know we were on the edge of ending today's session, but now that you've mentioned ABSA, ABSA has really had an oversupply on the market. The only good thing with ABSA that I've really, really loved is guys are holding fort on ABSA. From last week, the supply levels and the demand levels remain almost the same, but nobody's moving. So looks like guys who want to buy are fixed, they're holding fort at the price they want to bid at. And the supply side is also very firm at the price they are bidding at, they're offering at. Because right now in the market, ABSA is, demand is at about 52,000 total. A bulk of this demand is at 8 shillings and 68 cents. On the supply side, we're seeing 380,000. And we're seeing supply, the highest is 180,000 shares at 9 shillings and 30 cents. And also there's one at 8 shillings and 90 cents. So the guy at 890, I think I've seen this guy here, whoever is holding fort at 890, continue. That is what Diamond Hands is all about. The guy at 890, I think, has been here for about a week now. He's not, the 145,000 shares have been there, I think, for the whole of last week. So yeah, guys would trade at 880 and even 888, but nobody would move at 890. So you see how guys are holding fort. The demand side is what usually fluctuates, sometimes moving all the way down to 860. But still, within those levels, I think ABSA is one of the good companies that one could actually look into. So guys, if you're looking on a company to buy, do your research on ABSA. If it's a good company, you can definitely jump into it. But we're not saying it's a good one. We're not saying it's a bad one. As usual, this is not an investment advice from us here, from another podcast.
Among other things that I've seen that are interesting this week is that the Treasury is to back infrastructure bonds from four counties. That's Kisumu, Bungoma, Laikipia, and Makueni.
Makueni.
Makueni. Yeah. So I believe this will they trade possibly on the sec. They'll actually trade in the boss.
I don't know. There are a lot of things we need to look at, Davis. And I know we were having this discussion with you earlier today. With our county governments giving us IFBs, there will be a few things to look at. Yes, the treasury will be backing these counties, but our county governments rely heavily on the national government for support. My main concern is maybe our county governments should have really, really looked first onto expanding, probably to a high, because they've had 10 years to do a lot of stuff, and we've not seen a lot being done. They've had about 9 years. Mm. If we can work on really increasing the tax revenue and accounting for tax revenue, I think Laikipia has really done that by involving KRA in the tax collection. But if we could see all these other counties really work on that, it would be something very interesting.
Yeah.
Because we really need to, honestly, I think even as much as we've seen companies like CGR give the Makueni bond, IFB, a little bit of a higher rating, I think they gave them a B stable. Mm. So that was a B plus rating.
Let me ask. For each and every county, the rating is different. It's not taking a diff.
No,
this is the entirety of Kenya.
No, I think it would be totally different. Because for Makueni was stable. And I think the main thing that really supported Makueni was the tax collection, the way they've been doing it with KRA. So they're really accounting for as much tax as possible. Makueni is really accounting for.
Yeah.
In most of these other counties, and I know even Nairobi has tried to involve KRA, but still has a few challenges. Counties like Kisumu just started recently to involve KRA. But these other counties that don't have a stable revenue collection point, or they don't have a revenue outlook, these guys where you find guys, you still have collection of taxes being done in cash. Because I know an example is, I won't hit on a county, but I'll just mention a county like Homa Bay County, where guys still walk to collect taxes. There's a lot of taxes that go unaccounted for. So if a county like that would come and issue a bond, if somebody's from Homa Bay, I'm not hitting on you. I'm just giving an example because I've personally done a bit of research on that county. And I actually hail from Homa Bay County.
Yeah.
So definitely have to mention it. If a county like that would give us a bond, Davis, I don't know if guys would invest, because if you're seeing where 1 year the revenue is up to about 300 million, then the next year it's down to 82 million.
What?
How would they service the interest payment on bonds?
That's why the treasury is backing them. But anyway.
No, yes, the treasury is backing them. But then, oh man, I think it's still, because the government itself, okay, you know, the treasury usually, when the treasury is backing some of these, and even the state-owned corporations, what they usually do is, you need to show that you're able to pay it on your own.
Yeah.
They only come at a point when you're down, you're not able to. But if we're looking at counties and the political side, mostly as we move towards the election period, revenue collection within counties and even the country usually goes down a bit.
Yeah.
Not because of the election period, but also because of what I know usually happens. I'd say I, because Davis is not into it, but where we usually see politicians really, we have a lot of corruption and scandals that usually happen during that, towards the election period. Guys want to load as much money as they can so that they can use it for the campaigns.
Yeah, we'll give clarity at you know when you're involved.
Okay, guys, I don't know that story. Forget about it. I didn't say that. I don't know about it. But what I assume, I assume is better, right?
Yeah.
What I assume usually happens is guys want to collect as much money, so there's revenue that is hit. And then also during the first year, it's very hard to raise, because the new governor or the new government, county government, is just trying to really fix in a few things. There's a new regime in place. So it would be if they issue, say, a three-year bond, maybe these retail bonds, the small ones like Emma Kiba, something fairly stable. But if they come in and give an IFB, you know, an IFB definitely has to be long-term.
Yeah.
So it would be at least a minimum of 10 years or maybe 15 years.
Mm.
Does it mean that every time the Treasury will have to come and bail out? And you know, like, finally, in the long run, the county government will definitely have to pay its debts one way or another. But are we going to have an issue where they default on on payments, on interest payments, maybe like 3 or 4 times, or at times even they don't default but they're very late. Those are things that investors really never want to listen to.
Yeah, so that's of concern. Actually, if you're a prospective bond investor, please really and diligently look at the revenues for each individual county. Like, never, I'll always say this, and this is actually in Benjamin Graham's book, Securities Analysis. Hey, it's a very boring book by the way. It's 800 pages.
It's boring.
As in, it is deep. In its language from the 1930s, but it's solid analysis and everything. So he says that never invest in a bond based on whatever is backing it. Invest rather based on the cash flows. Because ultimately, I don't know if Kenyan bonds trade like US bonds. So the trading price of a bond, of course, as it's maturing, it will start trading closer towards par, like 100, if you will. So now you'll still hear that bonds start trading at huge discounts when the cash flows are limited, in a sense. I'm still not sure if Kenyan bonds trade in a similar way. No, they don't.
Man.
Okay, in the US markets, where as we frequent, of course. So you can find a bond really trading at a huge discount or a premium, depending on the cash flows surrounding that bond, depending on the factors surrounding the company and the like. So really investigate the revenues of these particular counties and see whether they are sustainable going forward, because that's the only way that they can match interest payments on the bonds being issued.
All right, very interesting, Davis. I don't know if you have a parting shot. I believe we've had a lot of discussion on market, off market. I believe an investor definitely would have time and just say, this made sense, this didn't make sense. I'm going to discard this, I'm going to use this, and I'll probably back my research before I buy that stock on probably X or Y. So that's one thing that I know investors would really be keen to look at.
Yeah, I just advise people, really do your research. Like, there's among things that I've noticed, for example, if you see an analyst report, you see, buy, it's undervalued at this price. Like, it's better if you do your own analysis and can ascertain, like, you have solid reasons as to why you're buying into this company, such that when there are drawdowns, when bad news is affecting the company in the short term, you're not tempted to sell out, in a sense. You're investing more because you know. In fact, you're actually buying more of this company because you know that this is a short-term effect and that the company is likely to recover because you've done your due diligence and you don't need, let's say, external factors that are particularly driving you toward making this decision. Yeah, that's what I'd advise people. Like, really, really diligently do your own research because it will save you from losing a lot of money, especially in the stock market.
All right. I guess that's it. Thanks a lot, Davis. We're definitely going to start a few discussions on this on HISA. So you might want to download the HISA app and just sign up, get a few things here and there in place, and then also share your thoughts. If you're investing in Home Africa, definitely, we might want to just ask a few things from the company before they release their results. Which I don't know, but COVID, yep, kama kawaida, they definitely have an excuse. COVID is definitely going to impact Home Africa. They had actually said that in the last week, Home Africa released a shareholder notice where they told guys that they would delay in releasing their results.
Yeah, that was Home Africa, Crown, and another one. East Africa Cables.
Yeah, Cables.
Yeah, so, translation, that just means they'll likely announce losses. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, but if Home Africa would move up to about, I don't know if I should start averaging down. But that's one thing. That's a story for another day.
You entered at 23. Wait, so, by the way, you know, people should know. For you to average down, I think for every loss, you need to buy 3 times what it is. So, for example, if you bought a stock at, let's say it was trading at 50 shillings, and then the share price, you bought 100 shares at 50, and then the share price dropped to 40, you need to buy 3 to 4 times
that
initial investment as to recoup your money.
I'm not buying Home Africa. That in mind. I'm not buying Home Africa, guys. And I'm honestly telling you guys, this is not an investment advice, but you really need to look into your, you'd really need to do your own research before you get into Home Africa. In 2013, let me get you guys the data. Man, it's been long. I want to share with you guys this data before we exit. Home Africa, 2015, 3 shillings and 70 cents. It's been a long time, but guys, anyway, for those of you who joined us today, for those of you who've joined us on Twitter Spaces, you can always be able to feel free and ask questions. Download Hisa app, we'll be there. We'll definitely share a recording of this podcast as well later on about the market. This week, our watch definitely is on Safaricom. I'll be watching Home Africa. Davis is purely watching on the local market and also a bit of the global markets, which we'll be able to have a discussion on. You can also catch us as well on Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. We'll be having a discussion on what's really moving markets, local, global, as we discuss the bulls, bears, and whiskey at 8:30 p.m. Not 8:30 a.m., guys, 8:30 p.m. So I guess that's it, guys. Thanks a lot for joining in, and have a lovely week ahead. Bye-bye.